I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi guys, I'm John Weeks from Plant-Based Face Off, the Instagram page all about trying new plant-based food alternatives. I try, compare and rate the latest food in the vegan world and let you know which is best. I'm talking everything from burgers to cheese to chocolate. Check me out on Insta at Plant-Based Face Off. Now though, it's time for this week's podcast. Enjoy.
You're listening to The Contest and Me, a podcast from The Eurotrip.
Hello everybody, how are you? Thank you so much for joining us here on the Eurotrip for a special bonus episode of the podcast. You know us, you know we love to bring you bonus one-offs. We've spoken to some big names from the Eurovision Song Contest, Martin Østerdahl, the executive supervisor of the contest, Christa Björkman, Lee Smithers at the BBC was a very popular one, but this week, Rob, this is another biggie.
Yeah, new listeners. Welcome. We are the world's most listened to Eurovision podcast, so well done for finding us. And you are going to be rewarded, as James said, because today we bring you an interview with somebody that I haven't heard speak anywhere else about her experiences with the Eurovision Song Contest. Now, what follows is me and James saying her name in many different ways, which she will then give us the accurate pronunciation at the start of the interview. But I'm going to call her Petra Mehrde. She is an incredible woman, of course, best known as the host of Eurovision 2013, Eurovision 2016. James, plenty more besides.
Indeed, she's hosted Melfest on a couple of occasions back in 2009. She did a semi-final of it in 2016 and in 2015 as well. She was one of the hosts, alongside Graham Norton, of Eurovision's Greatest Hits to mark the 60th anniversary of the contest we all know and love. So she has got a lot of stories to tell, I promise you that.
It's safe to say she is one of the most well-loved individuals when it comes to the Eurovision Song Contest. So it is so good to have her on the podcast.
Indeed it is. So let's get into it. You're listening on Acast, on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. This is The Eurotrip.
Now, it's safe to say, whatever you were doing while you are listening to this, you have got one thought on your mind, which is, I really hope Rob and James don't talk for a really long time now before we get to hear the interview with Petra, because that's all I'm here for. I just want to hear from Petra, and that's absolutely fine. So we will keep this chat to a minimum, but I do just want to say again, thank you for being here. Thank you for choosing us I really hope you're going to enjoy what you're going to hear over the next little while, because it's a fantastic interview. James, you had the privilege of chatting to Petra, and I'm gonna go out on a limb here and say that is probably one of the best mornings you've ever had.
Indeed it was, scheduled for 9 a.m. UK time. She was running a little bit late, got there at about 20 past, but it's safe to say we were on the Zoom call for close to an hour and a half, and you're gonna hear most of the hour recording that we had, apart from those three occasions where her mother started to ring her and she had to dart away for those little occasions. But you will hear so many of her wonderful stories. If you've not been listening over the last 6 weeks or so, or if you have and you just need a little reminder, we've been doing a lovely little series called The Contest and Me, where we've been speaking to well-known fans of the Eurovision Song Contest, and we've been asking them all the very same questions, which we're going to ask Petra as well. So we're going to find out what her first Eurovision memory is, the moment where she first fell in love with the contest, her favourite Eurovision year and her favourite Eurovision song, her most memorable Eurovision moment. This is the big interesting question as well. Let's be been getting a lot of people talking online. If she was the UK's head of delegation, how would she change the BBC's approach to the contest? And finally, the one change she'd like to see most in the future at the Eurovision Song Contest.
The one change I would like to see most is that Petra just hosts it every year. I would be fine with that. If the EBU just went, you know what, Petra, you can do it every year, I would be well up for that. But it's safe to say that nowhere else are you going to hear Petra Mayder's opinion on the UK and Eurovision, other than on this podcast with us. So it's brilliant. I hope you enjoy it. Let us know what you think of this chat with Petra and what Petra has to say. We are on Twitter and Instagram at Eurotrip Podcast. We are also on email, hello@eurotrippodcast.com. And we would love to hear what you think about this, because as we say, it's a pleasure to bring it to you and we hope you enjoy it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the main reasons why we do this podcast every single week, is to bring you insights into the contest that you don't hear elsewhere. And this chat with Petra is certainly one of them, because I, for one, haven't really seen her do at least any English language interviews since probably about 2016, actually. So it's great to bring Petra to you. Now, you notice I'm just calling her Petra. Rob has tried to say her full name on a couple of occasions so far. So that's probably the place we should really start this chat, isn't it? So before we get into all of those crucial questions, let's just clear up a little bit of business with Petra herself. Petra, before we get going, before I welcome you on, I must get you to finally put to bed exactly how we pronounce your name, because so many people say it in so many different ways. So Petra, tell us how we would say your name.
Petra Mede.
Ah, wonderful, wonderful.
Is it? Can you repeat it, James?
Oh, I don't know if I should, because I'll just embarrass myself. Maybe I should just leave it to you and I shall just call you Petra from now on. How about that?
You say Petra, yes. The thing is so funny, because my dad always said, oh, we gave you and your sister international names. But actually, they did not. Because they can say Petra Mead. But the thing is, people say Petra Mede, which is actually more correct way of saying it, if you want to sound a little bit Swedish. So, but it's awkward for anyone who's not Swedish, I think. Yeah,
it is. Never mind. We can move on with it anyway. Petra, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you so much for joining us here
I'm
on the podcast.
So happy.
We've got loads to chat about. I imagine you've got some wonderful stories, but should we start by talking about Eurovision 2021? Did you watch it? What did you think about it this year?
I did, because I was longing for the Eurovision because of, we all know, the COVID, everything has been like up and down. And I think people have been longing for things that unite us and get us together. And so I was really longing for the Eurovision Song Contest this year. Yes, yes, I saw it. Yeah. And I will not say the country I voted for. There were many, many good songs. I was so pleased that they were able to do it. And it was great fun. Yes.
Why aren't you going to tell us who you voted for? Is it a secret? Are you not allowed to tell anybody?
Well, the thing is, okay, I might as well tell you. I think there were many great songs. The thing is, the Icelandic song last year, when the Eurovision it wasn't held at all, was it?
No, not at all.
I really loved that song. So actually, I would have liked that song to win. So I still got, you know, my heart was pumping for the Icelandic, because it was the same guy singing. I forgot his name right now.
Daddy Freyr.
Yeah, exactly. So I think I really like that song. I think it was, but the first one last year was even better. Actually, I would have liked that song to win.
What did you think about Tusa, of course, representing Sweden this year? How did you enjoy him this year?
Wonderful. Of course, we always want Sweden to win. Or the thing is, actually, I don't really mind what country wins, because I think the contest is bigger than that. It's actually more like a big party. And the most important thing is that people come together through music. So that's actually what I think the Eurovision Song Contest stands for, more than being a song contest, which is also, of course, nice. But I think the party and the love around it. And of course, Tusse is also very close to my heart. And here in Sweden, we have this radio show every year in summertime called Sommar I P1, Summer in the P1, which is a channel. And he talked for 1.5 hours about his life and his background and the Eurovision. And, you know, the whole country listened to him and we all fell even more in love with him. You know, he's just such a wonderful person. And his voice is also, I mean, I love the song and what it was about and everything. Yeah.
You must have watched Melody Festival in this year as well, I imagine. It looked a little bit different to how we've seen in recent years without the crowd. But did you watch it? Did you enjoy it? Did they do a good job?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think, not to be bragging too much, but I think that Sweden, thanks to many people, Christer Björkman, of course, and Edvard af Sillén and many, many more, have made the Swedish competition, which is called Melodifestivalen, you know, a great show that is like a tradition that, you know, the majority of the Swedes watch it. This year, a dear friend of mine, Anna Granat and Micke Mortensson, they were responsible for everything that was around the competition, like the comedy and the sketches and the hosts and everything. And so they were like different hosts every time, without an audience, but on a great stage. And it was in the final Måns Zelmerlöw and Shima Niavarani, who's a great artist. And I think they did a very, very good job. And it was one spectacular, what do you say? Do you say number or like a spectacular number made by Pernilla Wahlgren and Per Andersson, who are two comedians and singers here in Sweden. And they just blew us away. And I think Anna and Micke, who made this number, they were just one of the best things I've ever seen. You know, things were put on fire and they were hanging down from the ceiling. And it was a number where everything that can go wrong did go wrong. So it was, I think they did a great job. And the thing is, I think that all the Swedes working in the media or artists, we have become kind of used to not having an audience, sadly. I mean, we love when the audience is there, but we have had to cope as good as we can. So everything on the telly has been, you know, I've been doing other shows on the Channel 4 and Let's Dance, which you also have in England, of course, but do you call it Let's Dance? Yeah.
Strictly Come Dancing, we call it.
Strictly Come Dancing, yeah. And I mean, we are used to having, you know, so many people around, and we did it without any audience, and somehow we managed to make something else out of it, and even become somewhat used to it. So I think that the Swedish television as a whole has coped, but we are longing for the audience, of course.
And it was the final year of Christer Björkman, of course. You mentioned him yourself. He's just done a remarkable job over the last 20 years or so. You must know him quite well as well. I imagine you've worked with him a few times too.
Yes, I absolutely. I don't know everything about him. I know that he's very tired in the morning. that I learned. He made such a good concept, and he made the Swedish Melodifestival something that was concerning almost everyone, you know, from children to elderly, and very a show that was very including, and where also new artists can, can make great success. And the Swedish competition has become very, very important. I don't know if it's that important in other countries, actually. How is your national show doing? I mean, because you do have a competition. I mean, wasn't Mons?
Yeah, so from 2016 to 2019, we had a national final, but it was just one show on one evening. It was very small.
But is the Eurovision Song Contest as big as it is in Sweden, in Great Britain? Yeah. Or
in the UK, it's very popular, especially on the evening. But I think a lot of people watch it because they don't like it and they like to sort of make nasty comments about it and stuff like that. So I think the Swedish audience really appreciates it, whereas a lot of the UK audience doesn't, sadly. But maybe that will change. Maybe that will change.
I think that, because that was actually the way Swedes looked upon the Eurovision Song Contest before, like 20 years ago. But I think Christy Björkman changed that into taking it more seriously. Of course, we can still have like entries that are more comic. I mean, we still can see that in the Eurovision Song Contest, and then you can laugh at it. But at the same time, we consider it a very, you know, kind of high profile competition. We had our opera singer, Malena Ernman, who participated, who is like an international opera star. And if you talk about credibility, I think the Melody Festival has earned more credibility in the 20 years that Christy Björkman has worked with it.
We'll talk a little bit more about the UK and the BBC a little bit later, but I want to wind the clock back. I don't know how many years, maybe you'll tell me, because I want to know what your very first Eurovision memory is. Can you remember seeing Eurovision for the very first time?
The answer is so easy, because I'm in the spot of the ABBA era. You know, I was born in 1970. So when I was 4 years old, they won, you know, every Swede watched Waterloo when they won with the song Waterloo in Great Britain, actually, in UK. Yeah. So that's my absolute first. That's actually almost the first memory as a human being, because it was so big. And I remember running down to the, what do you call the kindergarten, or how do you say it?
The school.
The school, yeah. Like preschool. And we were like hysterical, and they had newspapers there, and we were cutting out, you know, the head of Agneta and Frida and pretending to be them. And it was just so big, so big.
So your first memory is, in fact, 4 years old, and you somehow remember ABBA and the Eurovision Song Contest. That's madness.
Yes, 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 yes. And I think the absolute first record I got, I think my dad bought it. It was the Waterloo, the ABBA record, yeah.
Wow, that's remarkable. I know you were very young, but, you know, hearing stories from, you know, maybe people who are older than you or your parents, did Waterloo and did ABBA change the contest in Sweden, do you think?
Absolutely, yes, yes. I mean, I wasn't there to experience how it was before, but I don't think Sweden really... Well, you know, the 70s was quite like a left... politically, we were quite on the left wing here in Sweden. And I think the Eurovision and even ABBA was considered a little bit commercial. So it was not, you know, if you wanted to be like real cool and have a lot of credibility, you were like very into alternative artists and things like that. But I think ABBA really changed it in 1974, and everyone just fell in love with them and the contest. So from there on, I think it became bigger than it had been before.
So when do you think you first fell in love with the Eurovision Song Contest? It's a question we ask everybody. When do you think that moment was that you just sort of clicked with it and you just realised, I really love this Eurovision Song Contest?
Well, the thing is that I would have to be boring to say that it was that year. I mean, I was only four. I don't remember what I had seen before, but I know that from that day, I always was so thankful to the Eurovision Song Contest for letting ABBA win or having ABBA as winners. And I mean, they were like, ABBA and the Eurovision were like, for me as a child, the same thing. Yeah. So therefore, I would say that I have seen it more or less ever since. And then I think I fell, well, of course I fell in love with it when I was hosting it. Because then I really got into it in another way. And I met so many people that were like fans and, should I say, fanatics. And then I, you know, I just had no distance to it at all. So I would say starting working with it made me even falling more in love. Yeah.
I can't wait to find out some more stories about 2013 and 2016 when you hosted it. I'd love to know a little bit more about when, you know, you're growing up and you're getting a bit older and, you know, what are some of your other memories about watching Eurovision on TV or even Melody Festivalen on TV? Because, you know, we must mention that Melody Festivalen is as big as Eurovision in Sweden.
The thing is, it is sometimes I would say it's actually bigger because it's or equally big, you know, we care just as much about Melodifestivalen as the Eurovision Song Contest. So when it comes to Melodifestivalen, I remember when I was like 9 or 10, we always, when I went to school, because I went downhill, I lived up on a hill and I went down and I went with my friends. And if we started singing there, it was like an echo over the valley where I lived in Gothenburg. And there was an artist called Ted Gärdestad, and he had a song called Satellit that he won with. Satellit, satellit, oh. Satellit. All the kids just, you know, singing, and the echo over the valley, just, you know, being so in love with this song and this guy. That is like a great memory. And also, I remember, you must correct me when it comes to the years, wasn't it in 1980, Making Your Mind Up? And if you want to see some more, na 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 na.
1981, I think it was.
1981, yeah. That I think that was maybe one of, after ABBA, that was the second song that I really fell in love with. And I think the show when they pulled the skirts off the girls and they were like sporty and yeah, I always wanted to be one of the girls. I love it when it's a group of two boys and two girls, obviously.
Oh, honestly, those stories are just...
And we actually had one, I'm sorry to interrupt. We had Björn Skifs, also a great Swedish artist. And he was singing in the Eurovision, Det blir alltid värre framåt natten. It always gets worse when the night comes because I miss you and everything. And he forgot his lyrics in the Eurovision Song Contest when he was singing live. But I don't think anybody who was not Swedish noticed, but all the Swedes, you know, we were laughing, but we were like shaking because he was just saying nonsense. He was saying nothing, blah, 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 zum, 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 zum. And I remember being like this, but the thing is that nobody else in other countries, that they didn't understand it. So, but he really forgot all the lyrics. And I don't know if that ever has happened before or later. So that's also a strong memory. Yeah.
I'm surprised you never forgot any of your lyrics when in 2013 and 16, when you did some of your songs, when you were hosting. I don't know how you ever remembered all of the lyrics.
You know, when we did this, a number, do you say a number? Yeah, a number called the Swedish Smorgasbord in 2013, which was like almost 7 minutes long. It was a song and a big show about everything that is Swedish.
I come from a country that's hard to find, somewhere near the icy pole. But though we are freezing, please bear in mind, Sweden is gonna warm your soul. Our people are cold, but our elks are hot, a horny horde in every fjord. Our moves may be loose, but they hit the spot on our Swedish smorgasbord.
It was hilarious, but I remember I think it was like 1 o'clock the same night before, we were still rehearsing it. And, you know, there were so many things coming on stage. It was so much logistics about it. And I was coming off stage from that side, running with those dancers, coming. Was I sitting on a moose? I don't even remember. And then the lyrics, and it got faster and faster. And, you know, it was just crazy. But everyone, and I remember Edvard Ossilien, who is, you know, I think everyone who loves the Eurovision knows about Edward. He directed this this great number. And, you know, I just put all my faith and trust in him. I think we all did. But, you know, when we rehearsed it the first time, and I think Edward said that afterwards, that, you know, but they didn't tell us who were on stage that they, you know, they just said, but we're not going to make it. It's not going to be possible to do this. It's just too crazy. And the thing is that 2016, Edward had the same high ambitions as he always has. And then Mons and I did this
Love, Peace, Peace.
Yeah, exactly. that was also like, yeah, almost the same thing. Although I think it was a couple of minutes shorter, but it was the same thing. You know, the ambition we had, or that everyone had, with so many dancers and all the cameras. You know, I'm amazed that I participated in this.
What was 2013 like? When do you remember getting the call to say, Petra, we'd love you to present the Eurovision Song Contest? And you must have thought when you got asked, OK, but who else am I going to do it with? Because you were the first person in, I think, about 18 years to host it solo. You were the first person to host three shows, because obviously you did the semi-finals solo.
Yes, yes.
You're mad, aren't you?
Yeah, well... Yeah, I absolutely remember getting a call. I think it was Krister, Edward, and the new EBU director, just out of his name.
Yeah, Martin Østerdahl.
Martin Østerdahl, of course. They invited me to a dinner. And I actually, the thing is that I was pregnant and expecting a baby in January. So I, you know, I didn't even think about being an option, because I knew that the Eurovision was going to be held in May. And I mean, for me, I knew that, of course, I can do it. But I thought people maybe think that I would be on mother's leave or maternity leave or something like that. Yeah. Which I never were, never have been, because I love my baby and I love working, and I've taken her with me. So when I had this dinner, of course, I did the math and said all these three people are in working with the Eurovision Song Contest. So maybe it has something to do with that. And then, well, you know, we finished dinner, and then they asked, I don't know if it was Krister or if it Martin, I think, what would you say about hosting the Eurovision? And I mean, of course, I said I wanted to, but from there it was a lot of work and planning before everything was arranged. But yeah, it was an unforgettable moment, and I'm so thankful. I'm so grateful for having had this opportunity, because you know they have been the gigs of my life, together with the Hammersmith when I hosted with Graham Norton. You know, those three moments were, you know, the greatest I've experienced.
So what was it like for 2016 then? Because you must have thought after 2013, you must have thought, okay, that's once in a lifetime. What an amazing experience. And then they come back and ask you to do it again.
I could never foresee this. It was, but the thing is, I think that proposal came quite early, earlier than the first time. So, I mean, Krister and Martin and Edward they have to speak for themselves, because I don't know how the decision was made, but I think they made the decision quite early, because they got in contact with me and Mons quite early, yeah.
And what was it like with Mons? Because you would have, I presume, 2009 Melody Festival, and you hosted that, of course, and Mons was there. So, of course, you've worked with them and met them before. What was it like to work with them at the contest in 2016? That must have, I mean, it looked like a whole lot of fun.
Ah, it was so much fun. You were actually asking me about the first time also, if I thought I was going to host it with someone. But I don't think that we were thinking about one host, that, or they wanted to have one host. But the second time, I don't know who was asked first, but I think that both Mons and I just screamed yes, because, you know, we just, we haven't worked that much together since 2009, but, you know, we've known each other. And I think he's so much fun. He's a comedian, just as I am a singer, not, but... but, you know, and once we started singing, rehearsing, we just, you know, we just knew that this is going to be so much fun. And I hope that that also went through the TV screen, that people could see. Because I think that if you see two people having fun and then that they enjoy each other, that makes everything so much easier. And you kind of get into the same mood as they are.
I even saw some signs with your name on it, Måns.
Yes, thankfully I have a couple of monsters in the audience.
A few what?
Monsters. That's what my fans are called, monsters.
Oh, very interesting. Well, you know, I also have some fans.
Oh, yeah?
Yes.
And and what are they called?
They are called very intelligent people.
How much did you work with Edward? You've already mentioned him a few times already. But of course, I imagine the relationship must have been really close between you, Måns, and Edward to make sure that show.
Extremely close. Yes, yes, extremely close. Yeah, it was, I mean, it was like we were almost isolated doing our thing for many months. And then, you know, we came into the big production. But I think that is also very important when you work with the director and the writer, that you get into the same mood. And we were really getting the vision that Edward had for us. And, you know, he's also very so cooperative. So we made it, and he knows us so well. So he knew, I would say there was really nothing we had to like change or so. His vision was something we bought from the very first minute. And then Måns, I mean, I think I really discovered how much fun he was and how extremely professional he is. And, you know, I would say, because all of the people in the telly, you know, we can be moody and it's a lot of nervousness and things. But he's always, you know, just keeping calm or at least not showing us if he's irritated or so. And I would say the only thing Edward and I didn't agree on with Måns was coming out to his country house. Because Edward and I are so much of city people. And from the beginning, Måns told us, oh, we have to come out to, you know, we can spend the weekend on the countryside and we can swim. And Edward and I, we were just trying to procrastinate, you know. Yes, of course we will, but you know, but we never got there because we were too lazy and too much of city people. So he never got to show the great house, and now it's sold, and he probably bought a bigger one. So we were making a little bit fun of that, but yeah. It was so much fun, and it was also, I mean, it was so great to host it alone, because that's also sometimes easier, because you know, you just have to rely on yourself, and if you make a mistake or so, you don't have to be responsible for somebody else's. You know, if I don't do everything right, I feel responsible for Måns, whereas if I forget words or things and I'm doing it myself, I can kind of rescue the situation. So first I was a little bit nervous that how am I going to, and I'm also quite individualistic, you know, like having things my way and so forth. And I was thinking, how is it going to be? And the thing is that Måns actually just made me feel much more safe and also funnier, because he laughed at me, and I love people who laugh at me. And he was also so much fun. So you know, I would love to work with Måns again. He's just great.
Another one on 2016, the semi-final, the interval act, where you do this, you know, this big grand number. You know what I'm going to ask? The part where you've got to do the languages. You've got to sing all of these languages that have ever been performed at the contest. You're shaking your head. You look stressed already. Just me mentioning it. Go on, tell me.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say, well, first of all, I should say that when it comes to my preference, I like these old Hollywood, so I think that number is just as great as, because Love, Love, Peace, Peace has become, you know, like a kind of a song that all the fans know. But I would really like to emphasize also this number. It was so classy, and it was really up my alley. Is that what you're saying? Or down my alley? So yeah, but it was so hard. And Mons was so much better than I was. So we were rehearsing day and night. It was so fast. I think we shouldn't compare, but I would say Mons did it somewhat better. But it was, yeah.
And that was live, wasn't it?
It's all Edward's fault. No, who wrote the lyrics? I should have a talk to that person.
And it was live, wasn't it? You weren't miming. You were actually singing those words live on the night.
Crazy.
A Romance and Luxembourgish sung. We've had two songs with sign language and three in a made-up tongue. Antillean Creole, Norwegian, Vero, Viennese, Neapolitan, Catalan, Udmurt, Montenegrin and Maltese.
It's Greek, Albanian, Slovak, Ukrainian, Romani, Russian, Romanian, Crimean, Slovenian, Hebrew, Armenian, Arabic and Lithuanian.
Portuguese, Macedonian, Breton, Estonian, Pontic, Icelandic, Croatian, Bulgarian, Georgian, Italian, Bosnian, Latvian, Corsican, Serbian, German, Hungarian.
Polish and English and Irish and Finnish and Swedish and Spanish and Dutch. Some Turkish and Danish and French.
Tahitian, though not very much.
And though I don't know Czech, Swahili, Azeri, or Greek,
music is the language that we all know how to speak.
And not only that, but I mean, when it comes to singing and just, you know, it was kind of a lot of choreography at the same time. And also there, we had all the dancers, you know, they were standing in that line or there. So you can't make any mistakes. That's what I mean. If you're standing alone on stage, I would say that's actually the easiest thing, because you can if you feel safe. I mean, and as a comedian, I'm a comedian from the beginning. You can always kind of get through things. But when you're in this great show and everyone, you have to rely on each other. You know, I can't just bump into a dancer or you know, everyone will fall. And so, but the only thing I miss is not being able to do it again, because, you know, those things, we do it once. Of course, that is also the charm of it. But, you know, sometimes you want to say, oh, I would like to do that again. I would like to do those two numbers, you know, 100 times more. But it's one off. That's also the great part of Eurovision, that it's direct and it's live and it never comes back.
Yeah, it's absolutely marvellous. And thankfully, you did a wonderful job both times. I want to ask you about your favourite Eurovision year. I know we've talked a lot about 2013 and 2016, so maybe you can try and choose between them. But also, another of your favourite years where you didn't host, just because of the songs or something else. Can you try and choose a favourite year as well?
When it comes to the earlier Eurovision Song Contests, I mainly remember the songs actually more than the show around it. And I think that's also because the show around it has become so much bigger the last years. I mean, I remember, of course, Lilin Fors, Swedish host in 1985, should that be?
Yeah.
When she dropped her dress. I mean, that is like, and she is, you know, she's like a role model for me, because she is so calm and sure of herself, and I was so inspired by her. So that was, you know, I'm sounding very nationalistic, but of course it's more fun when your own country is hosting it, and that's also what you remember. So I remember that also when Germany did it a couple of years ago, when they had the I think it was great. What was the girl, the comedian's name? I don't have it now, but I think she was so much fun, and they did a great job also. And I remember, what year was that? Si tu aimes la musique, danser avec moi. Si tu aimes danser, na 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 na. You know that song? Me and my best friend, I think we were around 9, 10, we wrote a Swedish version, the Swedish lyrics to that song. And then we sent it to the Swedish television and said that we had written the whole song and we wanted to perform it in Swedish. But of course, they understood that this was not our song. So we never got to sing it. But I remember the Swedish lyrics. Om du gillar musiken, kom och sjung med mig. It was, yeah, we translated it into Swedish. It's now these are like just glimpse of different Eurovision Song Contests.
I know I asked you for your favorite year and you've mentioned about 20 different years, but I'm going to let you off because I'm not going to force you to choose one. But it moves us nicely on to favorite Eurovision song. And for somebody who isn't a singer, you've sung quite a lot so far.
Mm-hmm.
But which is wonderful, I must say. But can you...
Well, don't be my manager never thought it was a great idea. You can't sing. Well, I did my best. I always wanted to be a singer. I would have loved to have participated in the Melody Festival, but I don't think I'm that much of a singer. But I do sing. You know, no one can stop me from singing in the bathroom. Yeah. Or Eurovision Song Contest.
Well, now we're at the time where the submission window is open for Melody Festivalen. Mm. Are you, Petra, going to write a song, enter a song? Are we going to see you in Melody Festivalen 2022?
Well, the thing is, I must tell you, I had a dream. I don't know if it was a nightmare or if it was a wonderful dream. I dreamt that I was going to participate in the Melody Festivalen because I think I have like a little, yeah, you know, there's something that I can't let go of. And the thing is that everything was in the dream. Everything was arranged very quickly. They said, oh, we have a song here. You're going to sing it tomorrow. And you're not announced, but we will, you know, we will tell it during the show that you are coming. So I hardly learned the song. And, you know, I was trying to do the dance steps. And, you know, my manager said, this isn't good, you know, but, you know, now we have promised. And I just said, but am I going to, you know, am I going to spoil my career as a host and a comedian by doing this? And, you know, my manager say, yeah, you might do. But everyone was like, you know, like clapping, like when you're at school and people are, yeah, do it. And then you kind of do something that you never should have done. And I remember waking up all wet and sweaty just when I was going to start singing.
So maybe the dream was an omen. Don't do it. Stick to comedy. Stick to presenting. That's your area. Don't do any more singing. What about your favourite song then? Have you got some favourites that you always like to listen to? Have you got some that always come to mind when people ask you about your favourite ever Eurovision song? It's hard. It's a hard one, isn't it? It's a difficult question. It depends on what day of the week it is.
Okay, let's just mention some of those that I frequently sing. Of course, it's ABBA, it's Puppet on a String, it's Cliff Richard, it's Making Your Mind Up. I constantly go back to, the Belgium, J'aime la vie. And then, of course, Moncel Meleuve's Heroes, I think is... of course.
He would love to hear you say that, wouldn't he? I bet you he loves it when you tell him that's one of your favourite ever songs. He loves it, doesn't he?
Yeah, I hope he does. But I think it had everything. It was so powerful and Euphoria is also, I sound very nationalistic, but I think Euphoria is, I've heard it in so many versions. I actually heard it in an orchestra, symphonic orchestra played, and there I actually spoke to the director and said, what do you think about this melody and this as a piece of music? And she said, it's fantastic. And she comes from the, you know, classical music side, and she said that melody is so universal and also fits in different kind of styles. So, and then there's Johnny Logan, of course. When I was at the Hammersmith and he came up, started singing on stage. What's another year? Yeah, no, I'm sorry. The answer is What's Another Year?
What's another year for someone who's lost everything that he owns? What's another year for someone?
I can't really decide, but if I should, I remember, I mean, that's the only song that made me cry. Of course, I was also in that age when you cry a lot. So, and I remember actually going out with a boy, like, what year was, what's another year?
1980, I think.
1980, okay. Well, shortly after, or maybe 3 years after, I actually shortly went out with a boy whom I thought looked exactly like Johnny Logan. Well, I never married, so I didn't marry the Johnny Logan, but I mean, I remember one of the reasons I fell in love was that he looked like Johnny Logan. So I have to say, yeah. And the other Johnny Logan song is What's Another Year is better. Yeah. No, I will stick to that. I'll stick to that. Yeah.
Have you ever met Johnny Logan?
Well, I met him then. And we had like an after party after the celebration of the Eurovision Song Contest. I talked to him briefly, but I was very starstruck. So I don't think I said many words, but he seemed very, very nice and very polite and yeah, a little bit older, just like we all.
Shall we move on to your most memorable Eurovision moment? I imagine it's going to come from either 2013 or 2016, given just how much fun you had there.
I would say...
it's another difficult one, isn't it? Because I'm trying to think of 2013 and 2016, and for a lot of people...
Yeah, I would say one moment that was off stage, and that is in 2013, when me and Edward, we were like, you know, we never parted. And then there was like a little pre-party where all the contestants, it was like a red carpet, and the contestants and their crew were coming in to like the concert hall in Malmö, and they were being greeted by kommunfullmäktige, I don't know what you call that, the mayor or what you say in that city. They were being greeted, and they were being invited to, you know, having champagne and eat a little bit. So, and me and Edward, we were also standing there to greet everyone, and I was all dressed up and in makeup and everything. But the thing is that nobody noticed me. So me and Edward, we had so much fun, because in the beginning we were standing, you know, and I was, you know, greeting the artists, and, you know, they were not full of themselves, but they had a lot to think about. And I don't think that their priority was to think about, ooh, who's hosting this? So, you know, they saw my face. They'd never seen it before. And they were, you know, hardly impressed. They just thought this is one of the, And I said, I'm Petra Mid. I'm going to host. Oh, okay. And then, you know, so that was the first artist. But after like 30 minutes, they didn't even say hi to me, because they were just wanted to have the champagne and parting, talking to the mayor and the principal of everything. And, you know, so after like 20 minutes, and I have a back problem, so I was really tired. And, you know, Edward, he gave me a chair and we both sat down, and we were like so moved out of the center of this event, although I was the host of the Eurovision. That was really, you know, that was a reality check, that we were like not in the center of everybody's mind. But I remember laughing a lot about that. And I also remember, you know, now we can laugh at it, but I remember also the night before the finals, when in 2013, when Edward and I were rehearsing the voting, and we had to like get contact with all the different countries, and I had a address from Jean-Paul Gaultier, and it literally weighed 13 kilos. I don't know how much that is in pounds. 13 kilos. And I already had a back problem. So what we did, actually, we put a chair because the skirt was so big. So we actually had, there was room enough for the chair. And I, if I don't remember wrong, I think Edward at a point was sitting under inside my skirt when we, you know, coming with a chair when the camera wasn't something else. And we at 1 o'clock at night, we were still rehearsing, and you know, we were almost in tears because we were so tired. And you know, we had already made the two semifinals, and I don't know if people understand how much this week of work is, because we basically do two shows a day the whole week. So you know, when we do it live, we have already rehearsed it from top to end, I think, three times. So, and when you do that, yeah, I mean, you are just exhausted. And I remember Måns Zelmerlöw also, he had so much energy in the beginning. And I remember thinking, he's going to be tired, you know, after, you know, in the middle of the week. And I remember once coming to his, I think we had done the two semifinals, and, you know, Måns is always so polite, but for once he had put like a note on his dressing room. I'm sleeping, don't disturb me. And then I understood that, even he could become a little bit tired because it. So anyway, yeah, so I remember I remember that night when we were almost like crying of tiredness or how to say, because of,
I could well imagine.
I don't answer your questions very well. I give you like five answers every time.
Honestly, it's fine. We're getting loads of stories from you. I've got two more questions. We've done loads about looking back at the past. Can we do a couple where we look ahead to the future?
Yes, of course.
One, which we've gotten so many great answers from all the other people we've spoken to, is about the UK. And if you were in charge, if you were the head of delegation, if you were the person to choose, what would happen to the UK going forward? So try and make the UK better again, like it used to be. What would you do?
I think it's a pity if it is, as you say, not taken as seriously or just being mocked of, or I don't know how the rates are when it comes to viewers, or if it's high or low, or is it low?
The viewers are very good, actually, because of a lot of people.
Are.
Yeah, so that gets a lot of people watching it. But like I say, a lot of people watch it because they like to make fun of it, or they like to make ridiculous.
Well, I think that one thing that Edward and Krista and Martin and, well, many people working with the contest did was to be a little bit self-aware and also be able to make fun of yourself, that you, that in the show you show that you are having kind of a distance at the same time as you are in love with it. So you can actually, like in Love, Love, Peace, Peace, you kind of you make fun of the competition, but in a loving way. And if you have done that, then I think you have the mandate or the authority to take it seriously. So I think in the interval acts that are made here in Sweden in Melodifestivalen, it's a lot of meta. Do you call it meta humor, that we kind of make fun of ourselves and the competition as such, and that actually makes it possible to take the competition seriously when it starts. And then I think the magical thing is that building up to the final, if you go and have like 6 shows before the final and you go around to different, I mean, small cities have hosted the semifinals in Sweden. And that, you know, if you come to a smaller city with this national show, you know, everyone is, the whole city becomes alive and you know, for 1 week they really live for this, and there are so many volunteers working with it, and so they make a buzz about it. And if you go around Sweden and make this buzz and it builds up to this final, I think everyone in the country feels like they are part of it, and that it's not just something happening in Stockholm and that you don't care about, that that you actually build, it's like you build up to it. And also the thing is here in Sweden that it's possible to make a career out of Melodifestivalen. So you know that if you win, or if you do, you don't even have to win, but we have this girl who sang a song just with a guitar, Clara.
Klingenström,
quite a serious song actually about leaving a bad relationship, and I mean she didn't win, but her song and her career is just moving up like this. So in that way, I think it has become a little bit of what the idol has been. Isn't it like that in the UK, that after that you can really make a career? And I think the Melodifestival is the same. Whereas I have understood that in other countries it isn't. You can participate and then you just maybe are forgotten again. But here is, So I think those three things, that being able to make a good career after it, building up in many shows, and then having a lot of humour.
There you go. Write them down, BBC. Petra has spoken. I know Krista.
Finally, I answered the question.
I know Krista said a few years ago, Krista Bjorkman, of course, he said a few years ago that he would have been interested in helping the BBC turn their fortunes around. If the BBC rang you, Petra, to come and host a show, would you do it?
Mm-hmm. In a heartbeat.
Really?
Really. I mean, I worked with BBC and Graham Norton, and I'm so amazed by how professional the English telly, or at least BBC, is. One thing I can tell you is that here in Sweden, we usually don't work with prompters. So you have to learn everything you say. You know, you have to learn it by heart. And when I came to London to do this 60s Eurovision show, I just said, I'm not going to be able to do this. I mean, I can't learn all the text. And then I worked with Simon Proctor, who's just wonderful. And he said, you don't have to learn anything, Petra. We've got prompters. And I just said, what are you saying, Simon? And I just looked everywhere. There were signs saying what I was supposed to say. You know, there was a camera and just beneath it or just there, everything. So I could actually just, I had to prepare, but it was great.
Wow.
So I would absolutely come. Yes. If my English is good enough, now I see that I'm forgetting words, but I know I can get into it, absolutely.
Petra, and it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if your English isn't good enough, because it's on the prompter. You just have to read what it says.
Exactly. But how should I improvise? I will improvise anyway. Oh, yeah. No, I think my English is fine. I'm actually amazed by this interview, how I think I have a lovely accent. I lose words, but I, you know, and I remember at school, I always wanted to be British. So when I was like 8, I said, Petra, yes, of course I can. And I tried to sound like a snobby English person. I would love to come. Yes.
So Petra, next year when the BBC does 6 shows from 6 different cities, yes, shall we pencil you down for Newcastle? Do you want to come and do the show in Newcastle?
Of course. Yes. Newcastle. It sounds, castle and you, 2 good words. Yes, absolutely. And Mons can do the city before. And then we end up together in the finals in London.
Perfect. Let's see what happens.
Yes.
Petra, one last one from me. If we were going to change something about the Eurovision Song Contest, if you were allowed to choose one thing to change, what would it be? What would you like to see different at the contest going forward?
Well, I think now I'm speaking from my point of view, because since I'm a comedian, I would like to have a lot of comedy, more comedy in the Eurovision Song Contest. And I also would like the people commentating on the, you know, the national commentators, that they don't speak when the hosts are speaking, because then we miss, you know, I've seen the Eurovision Song Contest from 2012 being held, being showed in other countries. And then when I speak, it's the commentators that are just saying other things. So they lose all the manuscript that we have written, all the jokes, and I think that when the hosts speak, you can have subtitles instead, so that you don't miss all the fun that we have prepared.
So Petra, you mentioned that dream you had earlier on about participating at Melody Festival. And is there any chance that we'll ever see you host Melody Festival again? Because we've seen you do it twice before, and we've seen you do Eurovision twice before. We'd love to see you on that screen again.
Oh, thank you so much. I hope you're talking for many people. You know, I don't close any doors. I love Eurovision. I love Melody Festival, and it will always be a part of me. Absolutely.
Perfect stuff. Well, Petra, what a journey we've been on over the last,
yes,
goodness knows how long. Honestly, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you. Thank you so much for all your wonderful stuff.
It was a pleasure. I hope you got some answers, you know, or half answers at least, because I talk so much.
No, honestly, Petra, what a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us.
This is the Eurotrip.
When you aren't listening, you can find us on social media.
We're at Eurotrip Podcast.
Warming you up for the Eurovision Song Contest.
Well, I hope all of you listening have enjoyed that for the last however long that has been. It has flown by, because that was a fascinating conversation. And James, thank you from me, on behalf of everybody that's just heard it, for such a wonderful conversation between you and Petra. We learned at the start of the interview how you say her surname, but that was a while ago now, so I will just continue to refer to her as Petra. But, oh, Well done, you. Brilliant to have her on. And all I'm going to think about now is the fact that she passed up the opportunity to go to Mons's summer house. I mean, that is a trip that you don't say no to, surely.
Honestly, I mean, everything she said I thought was absolutely fascinating. I think she was just so lovely, so genuine, so laid back as well. It was one of those, you know, Rob, where you're having a, you know, you're recording an interview with somebody and you just sort of forget you are recording because it's just so natural and so laid back. And she was just such a joy. And as she was saying at the end there, hopefully one day we'll see her on the Eurovision stage again or on the Melfest stage, or if the BBC do pick up that phone, hosting a potential BBC UK national selection at some point, that would be exciting, wouldn't it?
Now, I want to know the answer to this. I think everyone listening will want to know the answer to this. The best part of doing interviews on Zoom is that you get to see somebody's room in their house. What room in Petra's home did you see? And what was it like?
I pretty much saw the full house, to be perfectly honest with you, because she was on a phone and she spent about the first 2 minutes as she joined walking around to find the best lighting in the house. She was closing blinds, opening doors, opening
big windows.
Windows,
that's what that means. Big windows.
Yeah.
A lot of Wonga.
But it looked absolutely lovely. You always say that one of your favourite backdrops of a Eurovision interview you've done is Dia Norberg back in the early days of the podcast in her lovely grandmother's house, I think it was, in northern Sweden. The Swedes love a lovely house, don't they?
They certainly do. They certainly do. I thought you were going to mention Andreas Mamontovas off of LT United. Interviewed him in his garage. That was another highlight. Yeah, we've had some good ones. We have had some good ones. Dave Benton's also got a good kitchen if you're interested. All of these people are people that we've spoken to on the podcast before. So if you are a new listener, if this is the first time you are hearing one of our podcasts, go back, have a look in this podcast feed that you found this episode in, and you can find all of those interviews. And maybe stick around, because we will be back very, very shortly, full steam ahead for Eurovision 2022.
Eurovision 2022, Junior Eurovision 2021, of course, is rolling around very, very quickly. We'll be here in December, but of course, there's a lot of countries choosing their artists and their songs, so there's plenty happening in the world of the Eurovision Song Contest, and the Eurotrip is going to be the place to be to keep up with it and to hear from all the major players as well as we get closer to each of those contests over the next few months or so.
Who knows? Maybe you will have found this interview late, and maybe all of those things will have happened. If you are listening to us from the future, let us know what it's like. What's the future like? What's going on? Who won Eurovision 2022? I don't know how late you're going to be listening to this, but anyway. Oh, please do, though, genuinely, seriously, let us know your thoughts on everything you've just heard at Eurotrip Podcast on Twitter and Instagram, and hello@eurotrippodcast.com on the email. And we should probably go, because we're not going to top anything that's happened so far in this episode, because that was all down to Petra, and brilliant to have her on. And Petra, if you're listening, thank you for being here.
What a pleasure, Petra, from me as well. And from all the listeners, I assure you, thank you so much for speaking so openly and honestly about all of your years and experiences. They were honestly an absolute delight to hear. But probably time for us to go, as Rob says. We'll be back with you again very, very shortly. We do promise you that. But in the meantime, don't forget to subscribe, leave us a review, and rate us 5 stars. From me, James, it's goodbye.
And from me, Rob, it's goodbye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.